Welcome everybody to Cambridge Inside Out. We've synchronized our clocks rather badly here today, or else
we're okay, but someone else is okay. Who knows?
All right. Anyway, so as many of you will note,
I didn't go away. I'm just.
That's right. So
down Judy has
Judy has graciously
filling in.
That's right. You know, it's like, unlike Tom Brady, who refused to come back for one day with the Patriots. Judy.
Oh, I see. Oh, I didn't know there was an actual, that's right, it was an invite, whatever. But I think, yes.
Yeah, something to that effect. So anyway, so welcome back, Judy.
Yes.
Just for tonight, you know.
Robert, so can I just ask you something? Before the pandemic, did we do it once a week? I think we used to
do it once per week. That's exactly right.
Do you realize that was like for 4 years or 5 years we did it?
I know.
I can't believe it. I mean, I was finding it tedious doing it twice a month. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, but it was also different because then we actually showed up at the studio.
Oh my God, that's right. We also had to go there. Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah, so it's
quite a commitment.
Totally different experience. Right. Yeah.
But anyway, so. Nice to be back, and I know you have a lot to share, which I'm...
Yeah, lots to talk about on a variety of topics, not only things happening in and around City Hall, but, you know, there's some various other things around town as well. Yes. I thought maybe we could just start, I wanted to say a few things about this ongoing process having to do with the review of the Cambridge Charter
review, yes.
Yeah, and you know, to dispel some misunderstandings, but also to provide a little bit of information that at least I find interesting, right? We'll see how the world feels about it.
And once again, I will say, you should have been on that committee.
I know that's true, but I have actually heard it said by those in the know that they didn't necessarily want an expert panel. They wanted just to have a cross-section of the community. And I actually think that that's sort of a bad idea for something where you're basically trying to talk about restructuring of the whole local government.
You have someone that has some institutional memory and facts of something, and it wouldn't have been all experts, but at least whatever, their loss. Anyway.
Well, I mean, I think there was a certain amount of politics that goes on. Again, I don't want to dwell on the point.
No, that's not.
But you know, and I'll say, since we've been doing a lot of research lately, because we're producing an independent video on the history of the Cambridge Charter. That, you know, in the four charters that we've had, 1846, 1891, 1915, 1940, in every single case, the change of the charter was done because of necessity. There was an identifiable need. It wasn't because somebody wanted a longer term or something. Yeah. It was not done for anybody's particular political fortunes. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I'm a little concerned that the motivations right now may actually be among some of the elected officials more based on their own political
forces. But also, it hadn't been reviewed in many years. I mean, I guess there was that sense we haven't looked back at it.
You know, that is the most legitimate reason why there should be a charter review.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't
10 years, right.
Well, yeah, or whenever you could. Yeah. But
they could always have done that. You would have said that. They could always have done that.
That's absolutely right. They could have reviewed it at any time. And I think there is a good reason to update the language, to reformat the charter. There was even a reference at least one of the most recent meeting of the Charter Review Committee with the fact that when talking about our election system, you know, the proportional representation election system, all the fine details of that are not in the charter per se, but they are there by reference to something called Chapter 54A of the Massachusetts General Laws, which was indeed repealed in 1972. And so, you know, that is a sort of an awkward reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, the language still exists, but it's not, you wouldn't necessarily go to the state website to go look up Massachusetts General Laws and find it. I mean, I have it on my website, but that's hardly a substitute for having the official one somewhere, right? Uh-huh. So doing some updates as to where the references to the how we conduct our elections, that's absolutely called for, you know. So, but anyway, at this meeting, most recent meeting, they had the previous meeting, I think end of January, they had people from the election commission were there. Discussing some of the pros and cons and the logistical difficulties of doing some of the ideas that have been floated.
Now these are meetings that anyone can attend. They're Zoom meetings, yes?
Yeah, unfortunately they're only in Zoom, but you know, they did have one meeting that we were both at the library. It was more of an open forum.
But that was an official charter? That wasn't an official charter review meeting. That was a meeting for the public.
That's right. That was right. You know,
but the other ones you can join and watch.
Right now, and it is if you know, again, not unexpected, but
yeah,
there was actually some of the members of the Charter Review Committee were noting that they were a little disappointed because the public who are participating in the process are pretty much the same people every time. Uh-huh. So it's not really, if there's any sort of notion that somehow this was a full blown public process with a lot of people involved, I think that's largely has not panned out. And that's a problem. And I think they're gonna try and take some steps to open it up a little bit, but so far no success in that regard. Mm. So anyway, I did speak at one of the meetings. I think it was the one at the end of January.
Yes,
sometimes I have a conflict because of this TV show actually.
Right.
I do review the recordings afterwards touch on that. Just speaking of reviewing the recordings, there were a few particular things I wanted to mention. So at the February 7th meeting of the Charter Review Committee, I was writing a list that kept getting bigger and bigger of misstatements of fact at the meeting, you know, and including from some people who were the supposed experts were getting things wrong, you know, and I thought it was important. And I've sort of addressed it. I actually wrote a message to the Charter Review Committee officially today, giving some background on proportional representation, not the details of how it works exactly, but some of the history of how it came to be the case in 1972, that in fact, the state legislature repealed Chapter 54A, the part of the Massachusetts general laws that have to do with how we conduct proportional representation elections. And at that time, that would have forced Cambridge to put it, to give up our election system without our approval, right? Initially. And I always knew it was in 1972 was the repeal. And I knew that ultimately it was overturned by something called the Belin decision of the Supreme Judicial Court. But I never actually looked up the background until yesterday, a few days ago.
And who's Belin? Found out. It's a person.
Yeah, so again, I'm not gonna, I'll speak it here, but I will flash to an image in a second here. But so Guy Dandolo Belin, it's also generally just by friends called Don Belin, certainly in the newspaper accounts, he was just called Don Belin. He was a city councilor back in 1961, who left after a year to become general counsel to the U.S. Department of Treasury during the Kennedy administration. But he was, you know, afterwards he was back here and was a good practicing lawyer of some high repute. And he was the lead name on the challenge to the legislature overturning proportional representation. It's kind of an interesting story, it goes beyond just proportional representation elections. In that what actually happened? I mean, I was actually quite shocked to actually learn about this. So what happened was there was an election the prior year, 1971. The Cambridge Civic Association took a majority, 5-4. Some of the independents were not happy, and they basically pulled strings, called up some of their friends in the Massachusetts legislature and said, we would like you to, we lost under a PR election system. Could you please get rid of your proportional representation?
Interesting.
And there was also perceptions at the time. Remember, this is right around the time rent control was coming in, that there was some perception some radical fringe that trying to take over the government, whatever. Yeah. So, in February, late February of 1972, the the House, you know, up at the State House, they actually voted, you know, to approve, to repeal proportional representation across the board. A week later, the Senate voted as well. And that triggered like letter writing campaigns from the Cambridge Civic Association, the League of Women Voters, saying, what the hell is going on? But we had a former city councilor, Thomas H.D. Mahoney, was a state rep. And he basically carried the torch in to basically say, hold on, you can't just do that. So even after the vote, he moved for reconsideration of the vote and then managed to get the okay to have it amended that would have forced it to be not just gotten rid of, but put on the ballot, the Cambridge ballot that fall. So that at least, and the argument was, had everything to do with the home rule provision under the Massachusetts Constitution, right? I mean, and the problem was Cambridge was the only city that had proportional representation. And now you have the legislature saying, we're gonna take away PR. And it only affected one city. So they said, well, isn't that a violation of the Home Rule Amendment to the Massachusetts Constitution? And that was kind of the big issue, right? Anyway, so, but it had passed. And then with the Mahoney Amendment, which basically would have put it on the ballot, which is not what he wanted, because he just didn't want this to go forward at all, but he had no choice. It was a compromise. Yeah. And then it had to go to the governor, Frank Sargent, who then, you know, who got a lot of letters from a lot of people, who then vetoed the legislation. And I thought, well, that was that. And there's a Cambridge Chronicle, I actually have it up on a website now, that basically says, well, that's it, it's over. And then in the dead of night, in the summertime, you know, the sort of the dull period of the state legislature, they brought it back to life and passed an override in both the House and the Senate, which basically made it law.
How could they do that? They could override the governor's.
Well, they could do it. Yeah, 2/3 majority.
Okay.
Yeah, and they actually, the state Senate, it passed on the narrowest of 2/3 majorities. It was 24-12, exactly 2-1, right? So, and that, you know, that was the least possible. So I said, and then, you know, what happens next? So then some local people, including Mr. Beelen, and others, they actually then challenged it with a lawsuit. They went for in front of the Supreme Judicial Court for summary judgment on this. And then on October 4th, remember the election's coming up in November.
Right.
There's a hearing of the Supreme Judicial Court. And on October 19th, then the Beelen decision came down. It said, nope. Mr. Secretary of State, do not allow those ballots to be printed. This is not going on the ballot.
Interesting.
And now, in other words, PR was repealed as a matter of law in the Massachusetts general laws, but because of the Beelen decision, Cambridge could continue to use it as long as it cared to use it.
So they didn't have to, it did not warrant going to a ballot. They said you can't. You can't go against home rule or whatever.
You can't home rule. Now, if the voters of Cambridge or the City Council of Cambridge chose to put it on the ballot,
then it has to be.
Well, then it's their call. It's not like the legislature is forcing their hand, right?
That's
so now, what I find particularly interesting about the Beelen decision, and one of the reasons why it's actually been up on my website for a very long time, turns out it's been up there over 20 years. Is that because it actually had some repercussions a bunch of years later in 1994.
Oh, the rent control.
Right. And so that's when question 9 went on there. And one of the members of the Charter Review Committee misstated what was called the Ash decision then, named for Charles Ash, who lived around the corner from me here, where people questioned, well, how can you put the abolition of rent control on the statewide ballot? Right. When it in fact only affects three cities in Massachusetts. Like, why is that now somehow a statewide issue? And that was the whole argument, right?
Yeah.
But the Supreme Judicial Court came back and said, well, actually, if it only was one town, right, then it would not be a legitimate statewide issue. If it was two towns, right? Such as where there was an agreement to build a bridge or a tunnel between two towns, mm-hmm. then that would still be subject to home rule, you know, just between those towns. Mm-hmm. But it was the Balin decision that was then cited back, you know, with the Ash decision to say that because it was three, and, you know, and that was, and that's exactly what it said in the Balin decision, you know, if they were, you know, if there were proportional representation in three cities at the time, then that would have been a legitimate statewide issue. So
interesting.
It's sort of funny how
Balin decision, comes back to that. Yeah.
It really does come back to that. So anyway, so one of the things that, you know, that I thought was kind of interesting. So I'm just going to do a little quick share screen here.
Yeah.
If it's all right with everybody. Just, I'm not going to go through the whole of it all because it's quite voluminous.
Yes.
But what I did was, just because I was interested, I went and pulled out of the Cambridge Chronicle archives, which I have access to, all of the articles having to do with this from 1972, from beginning to end, right? All the way through, you know, the repeal, all the way through the Balin decision. You know, and it's very interesting to read. You can actually read some of the particular statements from various people, including some of the activist community.
Yeah.
One of my favorite, actually, lines, I will read this. It was the Cambridge Civic Association was very opposed to the abolition of PR.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they sent a letter to their members urging everybody to write to Governor Sargent, urging him to veto the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this quote in the Chronicle. The letter said, in part, in a sudden display of machine politics, Senators McCann, McKenna, Councilman Clinton, and Sullivan, and a few cronies have quietly rushed through the legislature a bill abolishing PR voting in Cambridge. This self-serving band of old line Cambridge politicians courthouse hangers-on, having lost control of city government in last November's election, are trying rewrite the election laws to recoup their losses.
Wow, wait, are we looking at the Sullivan family history here? Is that
Edward Sullivan was very much,
and I'm sure Walter and Michael,
Councilman,
right?
Walter Sullivan, right? This would have been Walter Sullivan
too.
At the
isn't
time.
Clinton?
Danny Clinton. Yeah, absolutely. Senator. You know, they were the independents at the time.
Interesting.
Were opposed, right?
Okay.
But anyway, so some really cool things, and again, I'm not going to read them all here. But in the end, it culminates with the. I actually just put in completely the entirety of the Balin decision here. Because I think it's interesting, you know, a good education for all. And just to top it off, I went to Mount Auburn Cemetery yesterday.
Oh, right.
To the grave of Don Balin.
Fascinating. You know, look at that.
Whose wife.
Look at that name. Look at the name. Gaspar
D'Angelo Balin. Balin.
Scranton, Pennsylvania, just like Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? And who is married to Harriet Bundy Balin. Who's was the sister of McGeorge Bundy,
right, you mentioned
who
that.
Also went to Washington as the National Security Advisor
Amazing.
To Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. So, so anyway, I just found this to be a great opportunity to do a little history fun.
But can I say something, Robert? When I look at all that, and we've talked about this, the Cambridge Chronicle, what a paper it was. It was the paper of record for our city. And we just haven't had that in years.
Well, you know,
it's just so sad. You know,
it is an interesting point that even with the Charter Review Committee, they like to make reference about the importance of having an informed citizenry.
But
now, back then,
we do and we don't. I mean, there's a lot of stuff online. I mean, you
right.
inform. We have Cambridge Day, but we don't have a paper which has to have. You know, which it still does, classified notices, you have to have that, but.
Well, I mean, with the Chronicle certainly you can see it so brilliantly clearly in 1972 was basically having people like Burl Brenny were speaking, you know, she was also affiliated with the League of Women Voters, speaking passionately about the importance of maintaining the system and debunking some of the things that were being said by the other side, and they were going back and forth. So if you were a resident of Cambridge, you know, you really got a really good taste of all sides of this issue just by picking up the paper. Now, you know, there are people, myself included, who sort of try and put some interest, you know, little interesting things up here and there, but there's just no replacement of a real serious piece.
But also, I think I personally like to read a real paper, but that is not the way it's going. And even if you could create, I mean, I know the Cambridge Chronicle at some point was online, but you still, and I know they publish it, but what a rag. I mean, I actually sent a really angry thing to somebody because they had some article about $1 million condos in some place, not in Cambridge, and on the front page or something, some article. And I was so outraged that you dare call this the Cambridge Chronicle.
No, it's real true. And I've actually tried it's on really bad. Numerous routes to try and contact people with the Cambridge Chronicle.
No, it's done. It's done. And, it's bad.
Well, I mean, you know, it's sort of like rent control, not rent control, when proportional representation was outlawed, but then it came back.
Right.
So, I'm not completely out of all hope that one day there will be changes in ownership and changes in policy.
I think it has to come from the grassroots, though. I think there has to be a swelling, a groundswell of people here. And I would actually contribute to something if we could create a real hometown newspaper. But
I agree. And a real one, not just people sort of like picking and choosing their hot topics.
No, it has to be something that's balanced that you report on. Like you said, like kids sports, you know, I mean, it has to be. Yeah.
It's, you know, in addition to the, sort of the controversial stuff is also some of the, you might call boring stuff, but the stuff which would not be boring to everybody, but might be very interesting to some people. Yeah.
Right.
But just maybe not as controversial, you know. But the other role here of a paper record is, as evidenced by my pulling this stuff out of the archives from 1972.
Right. It's history.
You know, no matter, we can all put some effort into, you know, writing things and putting it on social media and keeping websites and whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, there's just no match in terms of those of us who are actually longevity, looking for historical record to be able to look back, you know, 50 years ago and pull stuff out, you know, and that's a function that's important, you know. Otherwise everything is just like ice sculpture and it's all going to melt away, you know. So it's important. By the way, there's another role too. I mean, I have in my own way tried by putting Cambridge candidate pages together for the last whatever number of years, sort of try and do the function that the League of Women Voters might have done once upon a time.
You don't editorialize, you just present what they do, unless it's some foul language, right? You just put out what they submit to you.
Yeah. Right. What I basically, I make a distinction on vote.cambridgecivic.com. Which is the, you know, that's the URL for the Cambridge candidate pages. That's just what the candidates say.
Exactly.
And I might suggest topics, but I don't force their hand because it's not for me to make those, that's all those decisions. I can guide, but I don't want to make all those decisions.
Right.
Now, that said, I've always reserved the right on rwinters.com, which is the URL of the Cambridge Civic Journal. If I want to say speak my mind, I'm going to speak my mind.
Yeah.
You know, but I've always very carefully kept a separation between that and the candidate pages. You know, if we had an active League of Women Voters, I would love to work with an entity like that to do this in a way that people could, you know, sort of decouple it from me.
Is the League of Women Voters still active other places?
There is a League of Women Voters, I think, active in Newton. There was at least one person here in Cambridge was inquiring if I knew anything about League of Women Voters here.
It definitely is a different generation of people that created that, right?
But you know, you kind of need something like that. And each time I've seen someone try and sort of put something up there that was supposedly giving information about candidates, it would take all of about 2 minutes to do a little digging and find out that the people who were putting it together were in fact affiliated with, you know, one of the candidates.
It's lobbying. It's a lobbying.
Just
information.
Yeah. So you know, if you want to really do it objectively, you really got to work at it. You know, and you can't just lazily, basically, you know, just pretend you're putting something together that's neutral, when in fact what you're really, really doing is just trying to assert your authority. You know, that's just not what it should be about. Now, in years past, Cambridge Chronicle would actually do candidate profiles of some substance. Even the Boston Globe actually provided some opportunity to do that once upon a time. And it just seems like that tradition has just been jettisoned, which I think is a tremendous tragedy. You know, so if you're a voter, how do you become an informed voter in this city? You wait for some propaganda piece to come in the mail?
Well, you get your little, your groups that send you stuff, and that's how you think.
Right, but then, you know, as many have pointed out, you know, actually, I think it was Ellen Schachter on the committee was arguing when the ballot question of 2003 on rent control, that what happened there is that the real estate people had a lot more money to burn. And then they did gigantic campaigns, and then they increased voter turnout dramatically. And it ended up with 40% of Cambridge voting in favor of rent control and 60% voting against. So, you know, the notion about, you know, well, we'll just let all the other entities just put out the information is pretty much a prescription for, you know, putting a thumb on the scale. You know, so, you know, anyway, I think it's important to have some kind of neutral way for voters to find. But if you think that the Election Commission is going to take on that role, forget about it.
Yeah.
Because even the questions you ask candidates to answer.
Yeah.
The choice of questions is, in fact, a political act.
Absolutely. You're right.
And they know that they have made that clear over time. But you know, there was some sort of suggestion with the Charter Review Committee that somehow they should be performing that function, but really that's just not their role. Their role is to carry out the elections, and that's really it.
Robert, do you remember the ballot question about owning your own cable system?
You know, I remember it. That was a long time ago.
And like, there was a recount. They wanted a recount, and all the guys in suits came along, and we lost by 100 votes, even though we had won before. And that's how basically Cambridge Community Television kind of came about, because Susan Fleischman and Nancy Ryan and myself, we were all on the grassroots group to try to overturn that. But that's kind of funny. Anyway.
So I'm not 100% sure when our clock
I know.
Runs
I think
out
we're
here,
off on our time. So we have.
We'll
sort of wind this out earlier here. Just so we don't go over.
We'll be putting up the recording anyway. So, anyway, okay. So on that note, we'll be back in a few minutes
in the next segment.
On Cambridge Inside Out.
All right, bye.